Welcome to Torah Dimecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Meyerfeld, and it's my privilege to be learning Sefer Shemot with you. Our Parsha this week is Parashat Tetzaveh. I hereby command you. It sounds to me like one of the most official, decisive expressions to get things done. In an attempt to make the Parsha real, I tried it in my house, but all I got was one child to look up with a very confused, kind of angry face that was obviously wondering, what strange parenting course is my mother taking now? Hashem uses the word command when he tells Moshe to command the Jewish people to bring the purest oil to light the continuous lamp that would burn in the temple, a strong word for the most beautiful, powerful flame. Before the invention of the light bulb, buildings were lit by the natural light of the sun. For this reason, windows were narrow outside and wide inside to funnel the outside light and brighten up the inside. King Solomon in the temple made windows that were narrow inside and wide on the outside, so Hashem's light would expand and light up the world. More than the temple needed the light of the sun, the world needed the enlightening wisdom of Torah. Here we have a command for the flame that we must light in all generations. We're commanded so that we know that Hashem will always light up our world. We're commanded to take that light and be the light ourselves. We're commanded to rise up like a flame and use the light to shine outward, to show the light to the world and spread brightness and goodness. The word for pure, zach, also means merit, and in the merit of bringing the pure oil, we are promised strength and greatness. Hashem promises, he commands, that if we bring out the light, we will merit to see the strongest hidden light in the next world. So many lights were brutally extinguished on October 7th. Our brave soldiers, now physically fighting, are sacrificing their own precious light in the battle against the forces of darkness. As a people, we are learning the hard way that only in unity will our light have the power to shine. Our newest, gorgeous granddaughter was just named Ora, and I daven that all of us find that inspiration and connection to be the light that fights darkness, so that Ora and everyone's children and grandchildren can grow up in a world filled with light. Moshe is then told in great detail how to prepare the priestly clothing for his brother Aaron and Aaron's sons and descendants. Sacrifices will be brought and the priests will be anointed. Instructions are given for a golden altar, all to make sure that we put in our efforts for a reciprocal relationship. We must know that God took us out of Egypt in his desire for his presence to dwell amongst us, and we actively make him our God. V'shachanti b'toch b'nei Yisrael v'ha'iti lahem l'elokim. Moshe's name is glaringly missing from this week's Parsha. We would expect God spoke to Moshe saying, God commanded Moshe, but no. Although Hashem is clearly speaking to him, Moshe's name is not mentioned. Some explain that the day of Moshe's passing, the seventh day of the month of Adar, always occurs around the time of this Parsha, as it was just a few days ago, and the absence of his name is an appropriate symbol of his death. Others suggest that it's a result of Moshe's own words. Remember the golden calf episode? The people had sinned, and God was going to wipe them out and start over again with Moshe and Moshe's dynasty. Moshe defends the people, arguing for their forgiveness. And if not, well, Moshe uses some very strong words there. Erase me from your book. Macheni nami sifrecha. Moshe himself said that his name should be erased from the Torah if God would not forgive his people. If they were gone, he wanted to be gone too. So even though Hashem did forgive them, the words of a righteous person are eternal, and they leave an impression. The effect of those words, erase me, macheni na, was that somewhere in the book, in the Torah, his name would be erased. Moshe would be missing where he normally should have appeared. And it's precisely in the week when we remember his passing, Moshe's name is gone. Moshe's name missing here is actually his greatest eulogy. We would have imagined that Moshe's finest hour was maybe leading the Jews to the Exodus or splitting the sea, receiving the Torah from God himself at Mount Sinai. It's none of the above. Actually, Moshe's finest, most glorious, absolutely greatest moment on earth was when he stood his ground before God, pleading for his people, fighting for their forgiveness. His most brilliant, shining hour was when he put his own life and future on the line and said, God, if they go, I go. If you refuse to forgive them, then erase my name from your holy Torah. It was through Moshe's total commitment to his people that we were saved from extinction. And Hashem himself was pleased with Moshe's words and acceded to his request. So the absence of Moshe's name this week, far from being a negative, carries with it a profound blessing. A name is a name, but here God talks to Moshe in the second person directly, you. And the you represents something far deeper than a name. It's the you symbolizing the spiritual essence of Moshe, his unflinching commitment to his people, come what may, even if it be at his own expense, the true voice of leadership. In an unexpected context, our parsha has further messages regarding the power of speech, and perhaps more importantly, the world-changing power of silence. Each Kohen had four special items of clothing, and the high priest wore those four and another four more, one of which is the choshen, a square breastplate with 12 gold settings into which 12 precious gems were placed. Each gem represented one of the 12 sons of Yaakov. The last of the choshen's gems was the yashpeh. The Midrash connects the yashpeh stone with the tribe of Binyamin. Yashpeh, explains the Midrash, is a contraction of the words yesh and peh, has a mouth. It was chosen to represent Binyamin because its name reflects a praiseworthy trait displayed by him. Although Binyamin was aware that his brothers sold Yosef into slavery, he didn't reveal their actions to their father. If Binyamin was being lauded for his silence, why was the gem called yashpeh, has a mouth? Wouldn't the more appropriate name be ein peh, has no mouth? What trait did Binyamin exhibit through his silence? Let's go back. The Talmud famously teaches that Yaakov and Rachel had agreed passwords to identify Rachel on their wedding day. When Rachel realizes the public humiliation her sister Leah would endure, she gave the passwords to Leah and Lavan's switching plan was successful. Because of this, she merits children who also have this trait, namely her son Binyamin, King Saul, and Queen Esther. I love my sister, and our parents always taught us to share, to give in to the other, to take care of each other, as did your parents, and as we do with our children. But this, it's another level, to allow her sister to marry her beloved. We see Rachel showing this character trait not just this once, but again years later. When Leah has dudaim, special mandrake plants known as an aphrodisiac, when Rachel asks for some, Leah responds, "You stole my husband, and now you want these too?" Rav Shalom Shwadron says this shows that in all the years, Leah never knew that Rachel was supposed to have married Yaakov first. Rachel had never told her that the passwords were intended for herself. And now, too, Rachel is silent, because to say anything would be so painful to Leah. Instead of saying, "I think it was you who stole my intended husband," she holds back. What was so amazing here, though, is not that she shared her beloved man, not even the trait of silence. It's even bigger than that. Surprisingly, Rachel's behavior is brought as an example of tzniut, usually translated as modesty, but I'm not going to use that. We learn what tzniut really means. Don't roll your eyes. It's not what you think. Tzniut is generally defined as a code of modesty which determines our mode of dress. If we're taught properly to look deeper, we know that this means to dress in a way that reflects our inner selves. Dress is a reflection of self-esteem, seeing myself as a soul, and the body gets covered to protect the soul. This approach puts the obligation as ben adam lemakom, a responsibility that we have to our Creator, a personal one between me and God. When the Talmud describes Rachel's acts as modesty, it's teaching us that the requirement to be modest is also ben adam lechaverot, a social responsibility to those around you. Don't roll your eyes again. It's still not what you think. And it actually puts tzniut in a different perspective. Tzniut means to act in a way which does not invade the space of others. Our actions are measured in terms of how they will impact upon the sensitivities of other people. Tzanua literally means hidden. It means that what's mine stays private in my space and what's yours is respected in your space. Clear boundaries is the essence of tzniut. Let's put the laws of tzanua dress in this perspective. The way I dress is not dictated by how much of the body must be covered, but by the awareness that how I dress may be an affront to the senses of another. This is why an outfit that meets the halachic specifications in terms of its length, for example, may still violate the laws of tzniut if it's designed in a manner which draws public attention. It gives us an understanding of many of the quote-unquote modesty laws of dress, touch, and more. Tzniut is designed to put up appropriate boundaries that respect us and respect others. Respecting our own space and not invading the space of others goes way beyond dress and touch and modesty. Tzniut puts speech in perspective as well. I think speech might be the area through which we have the greatest difficulty in focusing on the sensitivities of others. All too often we speak up because of the benefit we derive from what we're saying, and we realize too late the damage that we do to others. But I don't speak of you, I speak of myself. I know I spend a lot of my time talking and the rest of the time apologizing for things I said. And when they said sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, they got that one wrong. I think the boundaries of what can be said used to be clear. Parents could speak like this, children may only speak like that. Certain words were compliments, and there was clarity as to which words weren't. Speech is more complicated, so we need silence more than ever. All of the examples of tzniut ascribed to Rachel and to her descendants involved tzniut of their speech. Rachel knew the appropriate time to divulge sensitive information and when not to. She deposited in the DNA of her descendants the innate power to know when to speak, when not to speak. Clear boundaries with an understanding of self and extreme respect for others. In the scenarios we know of involving her descendants, the Torah highlights their ability to abstain from divulging information at personal cost. Queen Esther kept her Jewish identity a secret for years. In the choice of Choshen stone for each tribe, it's this specific trait of Binyamin, son of Rachel, that is focused on. Imagine Binyamin's feelings of loss and betrayal, losing his only maternal brother at the hands of his paternal brothers. He was so traumatized that he named all of his sons in relation to Yosef and Yosef's troubles. Relieving trauma is painful, but talking about it ultimately helps ease the burden. The only person Binyamin could speak to was his father, yet he didn't. The Yashpet gem represents Binyamin in recognition of his holding back his speech, his tzniut. It isn't called Ein Peh, there is no mouth. It's called Yesh Peh. Binyamin had the ability to talk about what was done. He probably would have benefited emotionally by talking about it. Isn't that the reason we often use whenever we have to share something? It's l'toeles, for my own benefit, so that I'll feel better. Binyamin knew what pain he would cause his father if he did tell him. This acute sensitivity, even at great personal sacrifice, stems from Binyamin's perfection of his inherited trait of tzniut, knowing not to infringe of yourself on other people's space. Binyamin, as the youngest child, absorbed everything his brothers had to teach and the positive aspects of their traits. His youth and silence allowed him to assimilate the unique greatness of his brothers' personalities into his own. His stone was the yesh peh, the stone of having a mouth and not speaking, made up of many colors, a combination of all the other tribes. Rabban Shimon was fourth generation in a dynasty of great Mishnaic rabbis, wise men, great teachers. Although he lived amongst great orators, he states unequivocally, "I haven't found anything greater for the body than silence." Rav Kook explains that mankind's greatness is our mind and soul. We comprehend and envision godliness, but developed thought needs a physical body to bring it to fruition. The greatest action our body can do for our soul, says Rabban Shimon, is silence. The ability to put up boundaries and know what, how, and when to express ourselves so that our souls and minds are actualized properly. A verse in the book of Job says, "The world is dependent on restraint." Tole eretz al blima. This can mean the physical world needs boundaries. The sea is boundaried by shores. The storms and sunshine are boundaried by seasons. Countries are boundaried by legal borders. The Talmudic sage Rav Ilya teaches this refers to society. The world is only able to exist in the merit of those that restrain themselves, upholding boundaries between people. When Adam is created, Unculus says that speech is the essence of the creation of mankind. But here we learn that silence and tzniut are the secret of society's continued existence. We create so much with our speech, but we allow it all to flourish in our silence. The Jewish people specifically are dependent on this trait of tzniut when Hashem destroys the temple and the people go to exile. It's only Rachel who is able to appease God with her actions. Not Avraham in sacrificing Yitzchak, not Yitzchak willing to be sacrificed, not Yaakov or Moshe with all of their actions on behalf of the Jewish people. It was Rachel who understood the boundaries in this world, whose merit stands us in good stead. The rebuilding will come when we recognize that we need to fortify the foundation of our behavior between mankind and God and between mankind and ourselves, by maintaining boundaries and behaving appropriately. Rachel's spiritual DNA, her trait of tzniut, was the impetus for Hashem to say, "Withhold your voice from crying, min'i kolech mi bechi, and your eyes from tears. Veinaich midima. There is reward for your actions. Yesh sachar lifulatech. Your children will return to their borders. Veshavu banim nigvulam. May the merit of Rachel's boundaried actions and speech bring about safe borders for us, her children, soon. As in the redemption from Egypt, so too in all redemptions we are inspired to mirror Rachel, to respect others through silence, to honor each individual's personal space, to behave with tzniut and healthy boundaries. This is her legacy to us all. Thank you for learning together.